From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Since taking office a little over 2 months ago, President Donald Trump has continued to carry out his promises of cracking down on immigration. President Trump has signed multiple executive orders to close the border, shut down asylum screenings, and expel undocumented residents. As part of this crackdown, the administration has also worked to prevent the resettlement of refugees. These programs have been suspended, and federal funding has been slashed. These actions are having major impacts across California, which is one of the top two states for refugee resettlement, and Sacramento is home to large diaspora communities. Jesse Mabry is the CEO of Opening Doors, a nonprofit that supports immigrants, refugees, and survivors of trafficking. In the wake of the Trump administration, the nonprofit was forced to lay off staff as a result of federal cuts. She joins us now. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So you joined us about 2 months ago. It was the week after the inauguration, and we were talking about the early impacts to organizations like yours. What is the state of refugee programs like yours in the country right now?
Sure. There's been a lot that's happened since we talked last. I believe the last time we spoke, the executive order that effectively suspended the U.S. refugee resettlement program was already in place. That came out on January 20th. Then on January 24th, there were the stop work orders issued for effectively all U.S. funded humanitarian programs, and that included resettlement services to refugees who are already here inside the U.S. So at the time that that stop work order was issued, for example, we were providing services to 521 newly arrived refugees, including a young woman who arrived just the night before. On top of that, there have also been a number of challenges in delayed payments. The U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program is a reimbursement-based program, which means that nonprofits like Opening Doors implement the program and the core services, and then on a regular basis, we submit invoices to the federal government for reimbursement for the expenses we've incurred under the program. We have not been reimbursed for this program since well before the inauguration.
Okay, so why is that? Why is it since well before? Oh, because it's potentially a new administration, so they would have to give those retroactive payments?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I don't know if we've had a clear answer on that. The work performed was in line with the program, in line with our contracts, and all done as normal. I don't know, and we haven't heard clear guidance on why payments haven't been made.
Has something like this happened with prior administrations over the years or decades in the United States?
We definitely saw under the previous Trump administration that there was a squeezing of the U.S. refugee resettlement program. The Refugee Act of 1980, which is an act of Congress that set up the U.S. refugee resettlement program, includes in there that the president makes a determination each September on how many, the ceiling for how many refugees can come into the U.S. under that program. It's important to note that that's a ceiling, not a floor. And so we saw under the previous Trump administration that that number sort of went lower and lower and lower every year. But in terms of the swiftness of the impacts on the program and resettlement agencies, I'm not aware of anything like this happening before.
Given that this is a reimbursement program, this must affect your bottom line. What difficult decisions did you have to make over the last 2 months and change?
It's been really tough. But, you know, for Opening Doors, we made it through the last administration that also, you know, put pressures on this program. And we've had some time to prepare. So we've worked very hard to try to diversify our funding and build our reserves and find ourselves in a place to be able to make it through this time period. We tried as much as we could to reduce non-staff expenses. So we got rid of some office space and have made some other cost reductions that wouldn't impact staff. Unfortunately, that alone was not enough to make up for it. So we did have to lay off about 15% of our staff.
What did these people do?
You know, it's a really challenging time because these impacts are happening all across resettlement agencies, not just in Sacramento, but across the country. We tried as hard as we could to ensure that any staff that were impacted at Opening Doors had had severance and tried to make connections for, you know, following up on health insurance and referrals to other employers and things like that. But it's a challenging time.
I mean, what did they do in terms of work that the community and refugees could have benefited from?
For the most part, these were staff, you know, casework staff in our refugee resettlement program. So right now we are not seeing any refugees come into the U.S. through the refugee resettlement program. As I had said, we had 521 individuals on our case roll at the time that the stop work order was issued. We made a commitment, despite that stop work order, that we were not going to leave those folks hanging. And so we continued to accompany them and support them as best as we could. All of them are in housing now, which is one of the most important pieces. We're continuing to provide services to those folks and have wrapped up services for about 300 individuals. There's still 200 or so left who we're continuing to work with. But without new refugees coming in, we just don't have the same level of work.
Mm. If that stop work order continues for the duration of this administration, we're only less than 3 months into mm-hmm. this administration, does that literally mean that you will not be accepting or not capable of accepting refugees for the next 3+ years?
Well, there is an active court case in Washington State right now on this. On February 10th, resettlement agencies, along with a few named defendants, sued the administration to block essentially this refugee ban. There was initially a positive ruling for us on the 25th, where the judge ruled that the plaintiffs were likely to succeed on the merits, and he enjoined the implementation of that ban. However, the very next day, the administration terminated all contracts to refugee resettlement agencies. Last week, though, that judge issued a second preliminary injunction saying that the termination of those contracts is unlawful. The administration did file a status report with the court just this week. And then they say that they are in the process of notifying the resettlement partners of their intent to reinstate those terminated contracts, but then after reinstatement, they do plan to suspend them again. So I think at this point, it's a little unclear of what the future of the U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program is. Mm.
I remember when you joined us at the end of January, you mentioned that there was a flight of refugees mm-hmm. that were planning to come to Sacramento. It couldn't happen because mm-hmm. of these executive actions. I think that's a good opportunity to lay out the road of being a refugee and arriving in the United States, because it is a long road for many of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So Opening Doors and most of the resettlement agencies in Sacramento welcome predominantly Afghan, not exclusively, but predominantly Afghan refugees, many of whom are at risk in their home country because of their affiliation with the U.S. as a translator or a mechanic for the U.S. military or something along those lines. These folks are in incredible danger. The Taliban is going door to door looking for people who have an affiliation with the United States. It's incredibly precarious. As you say, the entire process from start to finish of entering into the refugee program and then actually arriving here in safety can go on for years. There's biometric screening, there's background checks, there's many, many layers of screening involved. One of the things that we are seeing at this point, because in this process, particularly for Afghans who come on special immigrant visas, which is a specific type of visa just for those Afghans who supported our forces there in Afghanistan, the second to last step is getting that visa in your passport. At that point, you have gone through these many years long screening processes, the visas and the passport, you're ready to travel. And in typical times, you would just be waiting for the State Department to organize your tickets and your flights, and Opening Doors or another agency would meet you at the airport. What we are seeing, and because there are news reports that there is an upcoming travel ban, I think we're still waiting to see what happens with that, but there have been reports of that. And people are worried that if Afghanistan is on that list of countries, they may never be able to reach safety. So we're seeing that folks who were in that situation where their travel was canceled, but they have that valid special immigrant visa in their passport, are self-funding their travel. They're scraping together every last cent that they can. And oftentimes that takes up all of their resources. Over the last 2 months, there have been almost 700 individuals who have come into California on these special immigrant visas, over half of them to Sacramento County. And when they arrive here, they've used all of their resources on their tickets, and they don't have those resources for housing, for food, and all of those things that are required to set themselves up. We're doing the best that we can for folks who come to us to help them navigate the social services and the social safety nets, but it is really challenging without that federal support.
Yeah. Do you envision this continuing to happen as this legal battle continues, challenging this the pausing of these resettlement programs, the stop work order, but for those who do have the financial means and right. do have that special immigrant visa, finding and funding their own way to organizations like yours?
Ultimately, whether someone is an asylum seeker or a refugee, they are seeking safety. They are fleeing a fear of persecution and potentially even death in their home countries. And their movement here to California, to Sacramento, is an expression of self-protection for themselves and their families. That fundamental desire to keep yourself safe, to keep your kids safe, will persist regardless of federal policies. So I have faith that people will continue to keep themselves and their families safe. It's just increasingly difficult in this climate.
Yeah. When you were talking about this in January, you made an important point that when refugees are coming here, they often have family that mm-hmm. already live in Sacramento. Yeah. And so that's why it's so important that they immigrate here to this area. We're home to large diaspora communities. When you talk to the communities that are existing and living here in Sacramento, how are they feeling right now? Because for a lot of them, these are their family members yeah. and loved ones.
It's a really challenging time. And so the fear and the anxiety that people have, not just overseas at trying to keep themselves safe, but our neighbors here in Sacramento who are worried about their brothers and their aunts and their parents. It's a really challenging time. We remain in communication with the loved ones of those 83 individuals who had their travel canceled. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of answers and clarity to give them in terms of what the future might look like in terms of timelines of their families reaching safety.
Are you or have you been in talks with elected officials, the California Attorney General, other elected officials or people in a position of power who could potentially fight this?
One of the partnerships that we are really grateful for is with the state of California. We do anticipate shortly that the state of California will make some grants available to resettlement agencies to allow us to continue to provide that navigation support. It will not be enough to completely fill in the gap for the loss of federal funding, but it will allow us to continue to welcome people and help them navigate lives in their new communities here.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're talking with Opening Doors CEO Jesse Mabry about the state of refugee resettlement programs under the second Trump administration. It has been a difficult 5 years. How have international crises, conflict and war, compounded by the pandemic, affected resettlement agencies like yours?
You know, you tee up the question in a really important way, which is that first, organizations like Opening Doors really had funding reduced and resources reduced under the first Trump administration. And then we were in crisis number one with the pandemic. We estimate that 60% of our clients lost their jobs and their income in the first few weeks of the pandemic. So it was a real crisis moment to keep people housed and fed. And then we had the crisis of the Afghan evacuation and responding to that historic refugee welcome effort. The same month that we got our last Afghan evacuee into permanent housing, the war in Ukraine broke out and we started all over again. So it really has been back to back to back crises. And as we have been responding to these, the challenge has been how do you help as many people as we can that need the help while also paying attention to our revenue diversity, building up our reserves and trying to strengthen the internal infrastructure of the organization so that we could be prepared for a moment like this to ensure that regardless of how people get to safety, there is somebody here to welcome them.
Yeah. These actions, as you lay out, are being challenged in court. There's still uncertainty, but even uncertainty comes with consequences. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a light switch that things can just right. go back. What are your concerns about the long-term impact to resettlement organizations and ultimately the refugees that your organization benefits?
One of my biggest concerns is the sort of brain drain that is happening in resettlement agencies right now, as well as in other sectors, where we see people with tremendous experience and expertise who are leaving either because they're losing their positions through a layoff, or who are leaving because of the instability in the sector overall. I think back to what it was like in August of 2021 to respond to that historic refugee crisis and really try to scale up very, very quickly.
And that was the U.S. withdrawal in Afghanistan.
That's right. That's right. And thinking forward to a point where we may be lucky enough to do that same sort of response again, it's going to be incredibly difficult if we don't have people with this experience and expertise to draw on.
Hmm. Special immigrant visas, is that still a viable option? Is that at threat of being paused or terminated? Or if a refugee currently has a special immigrant visa, are they safe?
So if someone has a special immigrant visa, that is a valid status to enter into the U.S. and to live here. I think that it is probably too soon to say what the future of the special immigrant program looks like. I do know that there is broad support for this population, and they certainly upheld their commitment in terms of supporting the U.S., and it's time for the U.S. to mm-hmm. continue to uphold our commitment.
You know, at the start of the war in Ukraine, we also welcomed a large Ukrainian refugee population. Sacramento is already home mm-hmm. to a large Slavic population over the decades. And with this new administration, there is a difference in how the U.S. will assist yeah. this conflict and if they will assist this conflict. When you talk to Ukrainian refugee communities here in Sacramento, how are they feeling? How are they navigating this time?
It's a very uncertain time. So there were 240,000 Ukrainians who came to the U.S. to find safety under Uniting for Ukraine, and they entered with humanitarian parole, which is a kind of immigration status, and were concerned about the potential revocation of Ukrainian humanitarian parole. One of the things that we have done at Opening Doors is work with all of our Ukrainian humanitarian parolee clients to assess them for their eligibility for other immigration statuses. Just in the past few weeks, we have helped as many as we could apply for temporary protected status. One of the main risks with the potential revocation of humanitarian parole is that along with that, individuals may lose their work authorization.
Their livelihoods.
Really devastating. So we are hopeful that if a Ukrainian who has humanitarian parole has an application in for temporary protected status, that they may be able to retain their work authorization. But I think a lot remains to be seen with this administration.
Finally, if you deeply care about this and stand to be impacted by this or someone you care about, what advice do you have for navigating this uncertain time? What tools and resources are available?
So people can head to our website at openingdoorsinc.org to learn more both about what is happening at a national level in terms of refugee and immigrant issues, as well as how they can donate and support this work. We feel incredibly lucky to be doing this work surrounded by a community that supports our values of welcome and is incredibly receptive and supportive of our immigrant and refugee neighbors.
Jesse, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Jesse Mabry is the CEO of the nonprofit Opening Doors, and we've been talking about how federal moves to crack down on refugee resettlements and immigration are playing out here in Sacramento. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.